And the big story tonight is how the war is now escalating. And the situation is this. As we have talked about, we are halfway through the third week in the war. We expected, well, I don't even know what we expected. You can't even really use that word. Perhaps the president alone expected that this would be a quick and easy war, pound Iran very hard for a few days, decapitate the leadership, and a crippled and wounded Iranian regime will very quickly wave the white flag and sue for peace. Whereupon, the Trump administration can impose conditions on Iran's nuclear program. That was the idea. As you know, things did not go according to Trump's plan. The Iranian regime survived. The Iranian regime maintains its capability to launch drones and ballistic missiles. And they have used that capability to attack the Persian Gulf nations of the Gulf Cooperation Council, to close the Strait of Hormuz, a vital choke point for oil, natural gas, and fertilizer, which goes out into the Indian Ocean, and to attack and degrade U.S. radar early warning systems, and to attack the state of Israel. And so the war has settled into a second phase, you can say. If the first phase was the U.S.-Israel assault, bombing runs thousands of times in the first 12, 24 hours, bombing regime targets, decapitation strikes, bombing their navy, their military hardware and infrastructure, logistics, supply chains, things like that. Now the war settled into a second phase where it has become an attritional war, and it has become a war of economics. The United States and Israel are using their air and sea power to bomb Iran all the time and continues to decimate its leadership, continues to find and destroy its missile production and missile launch capabilities. But as long as Iran remains intact and as long as they're able to launch drones and missiles, then they are able to shut down shipping in the Strait of Hormuz, which chokes the global energy supply, hurting the global economy, and they're able to increase the pressure on the Gulf nations by hurting their real estate, tourism, and other industries which they're trying to pivot towards. So this is the second phase. This is the grinding stalemate. This is the status quo attritional war that the conflict has settled into, as we've talked about. And so the question facing the Trump administration is how to break the stalemate. It can't go on forever. The longer that the Strait of Hormuz is closed, there is going to be a lot of damage to the global economy. It might even trigger a global recession. Energy becomes scarce, oil prices increase, and that increases the price of everything. Fertilizer supply is constrained. That makes costs for farmers go up. That makes food more expensive. So we are facing higher inflation. There was an expectation the Federal Reserve, for example, would cut interest rates today. They're not able to do that because actually, mortgages are going up. Prices are going up. Inflation appears to be ticking higher in anticipation. The economy is pricing in the long-term risks to the oil supply because of the conflict. So Trump is looking for a way out here. He's looking to break the stalemate. And there's, as we talked about, a couple of ways to do this. Either we have a truce and a ceasefire, and that allows the Strait of Hormuz to open up, and it relieves the economic pressure on the United States and the world. So that's one way to break the stalemate, is effectively a strategic retreat and withdrawal. The other way is we have to actually win. We have to force the Strait of Hormuz open, but this is a very complicated endeavor because the way that Iran has closed the Strait of Hormuz is now mostly with drones, not even ballistic missiles, but with suicide drones. Iran has millions of them, millions of them. They're cheap, they're small, they're easy to produce, they're highly mobile, they can be launched from anywhere, and Iran is making more of them all the time. And so, how do you prevent Iran from closing the strait? Well, you have to make it so that they cannot launch any drones. How do you prevent them from launching any drones? It is impossible. You cannot bomb all their drones, drone production. You cannot bomb all the places where they can launch drones. You can't kill the personnel that are launching them. The only way to stop Iran from closing the strait, it appears, is to topple the government. And for a new government to come into place that orders the military to stand down. That seems to be the only way. And the only way to topple the government is to invade. It has been reported that the IRGC is actually seven links in the chain of command deep, meaning that prior to the conflict, the highest ranking IRGC officials, they prepared seven layers of succession. They have a second person, third person, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh person lined up in the event that they are assassinated. And then the next guy and the third guy and the fourth guy. So you can't kill everybody with air power and sea power. You can't destroy every place where they're storing, launching, and making drones. The only way to win is to topple the government, and you have to do that with a ground invasion, which obviously is off the table. So Trump is looking for a third way to break the stalemate. How do we win without retreating, without escalating? And what he is trying to do is find alternative ways to force Iran to comply. Why is this so difficult? Because right now we're bombing Iran thousands of times and killing all their leaders and destroying all their weapons. So you might say, what else can we even do? What else can be done to a nation? We're dropping tons of bombs on them. We're dropping 5,000-pound bombs, maybe bunker buster bombs on them. We're literally dropping the biggest bombs thousands of times everywhere, all day, every day for weeks, and killing the leadership. So Trump is looking for a creative way to increase pressure without escalating, to avoid retreating. How do you do that? Well, as we've discussed, there's one thing that's been off limits. They're blowing up the Navy. They're blowing up the missiles. They're blowing up the regime. The one thing that the United States has left untouched is Iran's energy infrastructure. As you know, Iran is a petrostate, meaning they rely on the export of oil and gas for most of their government revenue. And so if you destroy that industry, which is not easily repaired or rebuilt, then you cripple Iran's economy, but you cripple it for years. So that's obviously, that is the one thing that we haven't hit yet. We've hit the military. We've hit the regime. We've destroyed their weapons. We've destroyed the headquarters, the airports, air bases, everything short of the energy. Because even though destroying the energy would cripple Iran's economy, and it would take years for them to repair, so, you know, be a problem for the successor regime, we have not hit it for two reasons. If the Trump administration bombs Iran's energy, then Iran will retaliate and bomb Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, Iraq, and the Emirates' energy. They will bomb it. The Houthis will bomb it. Maybe the Iraqis, maybe Hezbollah will bomb it. It will be unavoidable. And so what we do to Iran will be visited upon the Gulf, and that will be catastrophic. Because in the end, all this energy infrastructure will be destroyed, and the global supply of energy will be chronically restrained, chronically, I should say, constricted. So you have a fifth or a third of the world's oil, depending on how you measure it, whether it's by volume of oil that moves through a sea lane or volume of oil overall. You have a fifth of the world's oil that moves through the Strait of Hormuz, which is going to be probably for 10 years taken offline, as well as liquefied natural gas, of which Qatar makes a lot of it. And that goes to Asian countries, but also Europe is reliant on it. And of course, the global supply determines the price, so it affects everybody. If you have an all-out energy war in the Persian Gulf, you have a chronic energy shortage in the whole world. And like I said, because the infrastructure is destroyed, infrastructure takes a long time to rebuild. To rebuild a refinery, a pipeline, this takes years and it takes tons of investment. And the question is, who then is going to invest? This is the same problem in Venezuela. We can't get Venezuela to pump more oil very quickly because one, takes a long time. Two, who's going to put up the money with all the geopolitical risk involved? It's tenfold in the Middle East. It's going to take years who's going to invest? Who's going to put up the billions of dollars to do this? So if we attack Iran's energy, then they retaliate. In the end, all the energy infrastructure is destroyed. This permanently constrains the global energy supply, which means that energy is permanently high. That means inflation is permanently high. And this is something the U.S. economy just cannot stand. We already have chronically high inflation. I believe it's been since 2022. The Federal Reserve has not hit its benchmark, its target of 2% inflation. And there's a lot of debate about why this is. It could be because of quantitative easing. It could be because of COVID era supply chain problems. There's a lot of reasons people say for the inflation right now. But this is the last thing that we need. So this would be permanently a problem for the U.S. and the global economy. So Trump doesn't want to go there. It's also a related problem. If we bomb Iran's energy infrastructure, even if they don't retaliate, that still further constrains the energy supply in the short term. And that's exactly what happened today. And we'll get into this. By bombing Iran's energy infrastructure, even in the short term, that constrains the global energy supply. Throughout the conflict, there has been oil moving through the Strait of Hormuz. It is Iranian oil, mostly going to China. If you take that offline, there's just going to be even less oil in the world than there already was with the strait closed. And then you'll have the same problem in Iran, having to repair that infrastructure. It will take a long time to bring that supply back to the global economy. And then even if you achieve regime change in the country, it will be tough for whatever regime comes next to rebuild if they don't have their energy sector intact, if they don't have that infrastructure still in place. So for these reasons, the United States doesn't want to go there, but it seems like that is the linchpin. And this is why Trump has shifted tactics starting on last Friday. On Friday, Trump launched a major airstrike on Karg Island. Karg Island is an island in the Persian Gulf off the coast of Iran. That is where 90% of Iran's oil exports move through. Iran gets the oil on the coastline and in the Persian Gulf, refines it on the Iranian mainland, and then ships it out to the island via pipeline, where it gets picked up by tankers and then taken out of the Persian Gulf and through the Strait of Hormuz. So this is the hub for virtually all of Iran's oil. This is the critical center of Iran's energy sector. And Trump bombed it on Friday, but only the military targets. Now, on Friday, I speculated that maybe that was in preparation for a invasion, for a ground force moving in and seizing the island. And that way you get a little bit of both. You're able to take control of Iran's energy without destroying the infrastructure. And so you can deprive them of the revenue without actually setting back in a permanent way the global supply of energy by destroying the infrastructure, which would take years to rebuild. That being said, an invasion of the island would be extremely difficult because it is within range of Iran's drones and missiles. So any amphibious assault on the island would surely be repelled by an Iranian drone and missile salvo launched at the Marines trying to land there. So I said on Friday, perhaps this is a gesture that indicates to Iran that if they don't open up the Strait of Hormuz, then the United States might attack the energy infrastructure on Karg Island. So the attack, by bombing the military infrastructure but not the economic energy infrastructure, Trump is threatening Iran and saying, we will do it. Maybe this is too close to comfort for you. If we're going to bomb the military infrastructure on the island, maybe the next strike is the energy. And the Iranians definitely don't want that to happen. So maybe that makes them uncomfortable. Maybe that makes them more willing to negotiate. Now, over the weekend, Trump made a pitch to the global economy. He made a pitch to the world community and said, look, everybody is affected by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, and some more acutely than others. And what he's talking about there is that most of the Persian Gulf oil and gas doesn't actually go to the United States or Europe. Most of it actually goes to Asia. It goes to India, China, South Korea, Japan. Most of it goes to the Indo-Pacific region. And so Trump says over the weekend, look, there is a global energy crisis. It is bleeding the United States. There's a lot of problems in the long term if we don't open up the strait. And so Trump tries to expand this to other stakeholders and says, why should we alone bear the burden of solving this problem and reopening the strait? Asia will be affected the most. They won't get the oil and gas from the Persian Gulf. So maybe they should actually help us open up the strait. They should lend their navy and their military for an allied coalition joint operation to open up the strait. He also called on NATO and said, hey, we supported your war in Ukraine. Now it's your turn to help us in the strait. And by the way, this is humiliating. This is embarrassing. Why are the Asian and European countries not going to help us? Well, they didn't start the war. So yes, Asia is worried about the constrained energy supply. And yes, Europe is worried about the effect on the price of LNG and the price of crude oil. At the same time, Europe is fighting a war against Russia. And Asia doesn't want to join a fight that really has nothing to do with them at all. This is not India's fight. It's not Japan or South. That has nothing to do with them. So Trump is effectively begging all of our allies to help us finish a war that he started. So what happened to this America alone? We have all the cards. We're the boss. We're the only country in the world. We're the king of the world. Trump went in, thought he could win quickly and easily, found out the hard way it wasn't going to go down that way. Now he's in the position of literally begging objectively inferior, weaker militaries to come to our aid and assist us, begging the United Kingdom, begging Germany, Japan, South Korea to come and help. As we talked about on Monday over the weekend, all the countries rejected this appeal. First Japan, then Australia, South Korea, then all the European countries, France, Germany, Italy, the UK, the European Union, Poland, they all came out and said, this is not our war. That's not in the cards for us. We've ruled that out. You started it. You finish it. So Trump then says on Monday, you know what? We don't need you. Which is the best? I mean, that really encapsulates everything about this administration and about this whole conflict. So Friday, he says, we're going to have a great coalition like it's a done deal. We're going to open up the strait. Everyone should and must help us. Everybody rejects him publicly and outright and forcefully. So then he's forced earlier in the week to say, well, who needs you anyway? We don't need your help. We'll do it ourselves. And we'll just remember that. Truly pathetic. So now, so today is Wednesday. This is why the timeline is so important here. On Wednesday, today, Israel launches a major strike on Iran's gas fields, the Southern Pars gas field. Iran immediately retaliates and they bomb Qatar's gas, the Emirati's gas, and Saudi Aramco, their oil refineries. And what happens? The price of oil surges to $120 a barrel. It had stabilized. I said this, I think, yesterday or on Monday. The price of oil had stabilized at around about $90, $100 a barrel. This is after it spiked past $100, not last weekend, but the weekend before that. Today, oil exploded, even though Trump is trying to contain that, trying to contain the price shock by opening up these strategic oil reserves, changing some regulations, allowing Venezuela to export more oil. In spite of all of his efforts to limit the effects of the supply shock, now the oil has exploded because the war has entered now a third phase where we, the U.S. and Israel coalition, are openly targeting Iran's energy infrastructure, and they are responding in kind. Now, this is a story from the Wall Street Journal about the strike. It says, quote, Israel struck the giant South Pars gas field that Iran shares with Qatar, by far the largest in the world. Iran quickly retaliated with an attack on a major gas hub in Qatar, just across the Gulf, and a missile barrage fired at the Saudi capital, Riyadh, with debris landing near a refinery. Israel and Iran had already hit energy facilities throughout the nearly three-week war, but Wednesday's attacks struck some of the world's most important hubs and raised the prospect of tit-for-tat volleys against oil and gas facilities. President Trump approved of the strike to pressure Iran to unblock the Strait of Hormuz. The official said Trump believes Tehran received the message and now wants to refrain from further strikes on Iranian energy infrastructure. Days earlier, Trump considered whether attacking Iranian energy sites could be part of an escalatory campaign against Iran, hitting one target and gauging Iran's reaction. If Iran didn't cede to U.S. demands, there would be more bombings of energy targets. Qatar condemned the attack as a dangerous escalation and a direct threat to its national security. Benchmark Brent oil futures shot up to close to $110 a barrel, and European gas prices surged 6% in the hours following the news. Arab governments were furious about Israel's attack and the U.S. failure to head it off. So this is part of a strategy. Trump bombed Karg Island on Friday, not the energy infrastructure, but just the military assets. And the message was unmistakable. He was saying, if Iran doesn't open up the strait, then we'll target your energy. In the meantime, he made his plea to the world, help us militarily take the strait. They refused. So Trump moved in with Israel to then escalate it, and he went from Karg Island military assets to Iran's gas field in the Persian Gulf, anticipating then that Iran would bomb Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the Emirates. Now, why did Trump allow this to happen? Well, first of all, he knows that the only way to pry the Strait of Hormuz open without regime change or a ceasefire is that he's going to need to make it hurt more for Iran. The only way to do that is to hit their energy. And he needs them to be sure that he's serious. He needs them to know that he will actually cross that line. So this was the strategy. Hit Karg Island, see what they do. They did nothing. Hit one of their oil and gas hubs, see what they do. If they do nothing, hit another one, until they open up the Strait of Hormuz. Now, why did he wait until today to do this? Well, what he said over the weekend is, if Japan and South Korea and India and China, if they are the ones that are actually getting the Iranian oil and gas exports, then they should help us. If they won't help us, then we will hurt Iran's oil and gas industry. Because who will that affect the most? That will actually affect, first and foremost, the countries that actually get the oil and gas from Iran, which is China, India, less so Japan, South Korea. So Trump said, if you don't help us, well, we will be forced to take matters into our own hand and escalate. We will start an energy war that will hurt you the most. If we bomb Iran's oil and gas and then they bomb Qatar, the Saudis, and the Emiratis, who is going to be without oil and gas? Who's actually going to face the most acute energy shock? It's going to be the Pacific countries. And European countries, which are now dependent on LNG, they will feel the price shock as well. We're good. We're a net exporter of energy. Now, there's some complications. We still import a lot of energy for reasons having to do with our energy infrastructure, but we're not going to feel it as much as the Europeans and definitely not as much as the Asians. So Trump, by bombing Iran's energy, knowing they will retaliate against the Gulf, that is his way of punishing the allies that did not assist. He said, okay, if you won't help us open up the strait, we'll have to figure out our own way, and that involves hurting your economies. That involves hurting everybody involved. Now, there's a big question about who actually authorized the strike, because as I said, this is an Israel strike. Israel, in the early phases of the war, targeted Iran's energy infrastructure, and the United States told them, don't do that again. If you attack their energy in the future, tell us in advance. So when Israel bombed Iran's gas fields today, it was assumed that they had told the United States and gotten their approval. And it was reported earlier in the day that the Trump administration approved the strike. But all of that changed in the evening. Trump put out a statement on Truth Social and said, actually, the United States didn't know. He said, we didn't know, and we want the energy warfare to stop. And that if Iran keeps bombing Qatar, then we will retaliate, but we're not going to attack Iran's energy any further. This is a statement on Truth Social. This is Trump. He said, quote, Israel, out of anger for what has taken place in the Middle East, has violently lashed out at a major facility known as the South Pars gas field in Iran. A relatively small section of the hole has been hit. The U.S. knew nothing about this particular attack, and the country of Qatar was in no way, shape, or form involved with it, nor did it have any idea that it was going to happen. Unfortunately, Iran did not know this or any of the pertinent facts pertaining to the attack and unjustifiably and unfairly attacked a portion of Qatar's LNG gas facility. No more attacks will be made by Israel pertaining to this extremely important and valuable South Pars field unless Iran unwisely decides to attack a very innocent, in this case, Qatar, in which instance the U.S., with or without the help or consent of Israel, will massively blow up the entirety of the South Pars gas field at an amount of strength and power that Iran has never seen or witnessed before. I do not want to authorize this level of violence and destruction because of the long-term implications it will have on the future of Iran. But if Qatar's LNG is again attacked, I will not hesitate to do so. Thank you for your attention to this matter. So Israel bombs Iran's energy after Trump told them 2 weeks ago, don't do that again. And if you're planning on it, get our approval first. It was reported this afternoon that Trump gave Israel permission. Now Trump denies it. And Trump is telling Iran, look, you didn't know, but we didn't give permission. And so if you bombed Qatar, we'll grant that that was a mistake on your part. Trump says Israel will not attack again. But if you attack Qatar again, if this, in other words, becomes an energy war, if you've called my bluff, in other words, then we will go in, the United States will go in, and we will completely bomb your energy infrastructure. Now, what are we doing? So what is going on here? First, they say Trump knew about it. Now he says he didn't know about it. 2 weeks ago, Israel bombed Iran and we told them, don't do it again. Now they do it again. And we say, well, we had no idea. And what this looks like to me is that Trump obviously approved the strike. So he's just lying here. I think he's obviously lying. And like I said, I think this was the strategy all along. Hit Karg Island, wait and see. Our allies didn't help us. Iran didn't open up the strait. So we gave Israel permission to launch a limited strike on the gas field. Wait and see. What will Iran do? Well, Iran maintains the ability to retaliate. Even though the ballistic missile launches are decreasing, the drone strikes are increasing. And now there's hundreds of drones being launched every day at all these countries, at the Persian Gulf, at tankers. Speedboats are intercepting tankers in the Strait of Hormuz. So Iran retaliates quickly. And Qatar is one of the world's biggest hubs for LNG. As far as LNG is concerned, it's really just Qatar. It's not so much Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the Emirates, Kuwait. It's really just Qatar. And LNG is in very short supply. It's a very hot commodity. LNG is how Europe has replaced Russian natural gas, which used to flow from the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines. And so now they're dependent on LNG. Japan needs LNG. China, India, they need LNG. And so if this becomes an energy war, if we're trying to put pressure on Iran through energy, they're going to give it back in full. And they're really going to hurt the Persian Gulf. And that's going to hurt everybody. Because like I said, that is going to limit the global supply of energy indefinitely, oil and gas for Asia. And then that supply shock will affect everybody. Prices are going to go up, fuel and energy costs will go up, and the price of everything will then go up. And if the price of energy goes up, well, you can forget about AI, which is dependent on compute, which is the ability of computers to do AI. And our whole economy is growing through data centers and AI. In other words, there's this contagion effect. This is going to spiral out of control very quickly. So Trump is looking for a way to break the stalemate out of desperation, launches this energy war. He's going to hit the one thing that we have not attacked, thinking that Iran will buckle, but Iran called our bluff and said, if you hit the southern Pars gas field, well, fine, we'll hit Qatar. Now Trump says, whoa, 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 we didn't authorize the strike. We promise we won't do any more energy warfare. So you better not do any either. Because if you do, well, then we'll retaliate. So what are we doing? What is the strategy? What it looks like to me, Trump authorized the strike. Iran did not buckle. They retaliated harder. This whole thing is about to spiral out of control because Iran called our bluff, and now Trump is trying to get in front of it. That's what that looks like to me. So yet again, we have no plan. It's the same story over and over. We're going to bomb Iran. Oh, they closed the Strait of Hormuz. We didn't anticipate that. Okay, well, we're going to attack their energy facilities. Oh, they responded in kind. We didn't anticipate that. We can't have it go that far. So this leads me to my next point here operationally in the war. Now, Trump is talking about reinforcing the ground forces in the Persian Gulf with thousands of soldiers. Simultaneously, the Pentagon is asking Congress for $200 billion to prosecute the war. And these are those stories. This is about the ground forces. It says, quote, the Trump administration is considering deploying thousands of U.S. troops to reinforce its operation in the Middle East as the U.S. military prepares for possible next steps in its campaign against Iran. The deployments could provide Trump with additional options as he weighs expanding U.S. operations with the Iran war well into its third week. Those options include securing a safe passage for oil tankers through the Strait of Hormuz, a mission that would be accomplished primarily through air and naval forces. But securing the strait could also mean deploying troops to the shoreline of Iran. The Trump administration has also discussed options to send ground forces to Karg Island, the hub for 90% of Iran's oil exports. Iran has the ability to reach the island with missiles and drones. Trump administration officials have also discussed the possibility of deploying U.S. forces to secure Iran's stocks of highly enriched uranium. The sources mentioned did not believe a deployment of ground forces anywhere was imminent, but declined to discuss specifics of U.S. operational planning. So they have 5,000 U.S. Marines on three amphibious assault vessels headed to the Persian Gulf. To do what? Nobody knows. The administration is talking about deploying thousands of additional ground forces. Already got 50,000 U.S. personnel in the region. And they say that Trump is hell-bent on forcing the strait open. How do you do that? Well, they say they're going to use air power, sea power, and yes, they're going to invade Iran's coastline. They're going to invade the coast near the Strait of Hormuz and on the Persian Gulf to accomplish what? I imagine to prevent drones and missiles from being fired there and push back the radius of drones and missiles from being launched. But of course, that shoreline will be within the radius of drones and missiles that are further inland in the country. How do you do that? Maybe establish a beachhead, set up some kind of missile defense radius on the beachhead? I don't even know how that would work. This is now getting into advanced military planning, but maybe something like that. That seems to be the plan. Moreover, the Pentagon is seeking $200 billion for the war. This is that story. It says, quote, the Pentagon has asked the White House to approve a $200 billion request to Congress to fund the war. That number would far surpass the cost of the administration's massive airstrike campaign to degrade, or rather to date, and instead seek to urgently increase production of critical weaponry expended as U.S. and Israeli forces have struck thousands of targets over the past 3 weeks, according to three other people familiar with the matter. It remains unclear how much the White House will ultimately ask, congressional lawmakers to approve. Some White House officials do not think the Pentagon's request has a realistic shot of being approved in Congress. The Pentagon has floated several different proposed funding requests over the past 2 weeks. By December, Congress had approved roughly $200 billion in spending for the war in Ukraine. The cost of the war in Iran has rapidly grown, exceeding $11 billion in the first week alone. Shortly after the joint U.S.-Israeli bombing campaign began last month, the Trump administration started preparing an additional funding request to help cover the costs. So it's very clear that they are planning something bigger here. Right now, the USS Gerald Ford has actually left the theater of conflict and gone to a port in Greece because they need to make repairs. They say that the bathrooms exploded, the kitchen had a fire, and now the whole aircraft carrier is inoperable. So it's left the Red Sea and is going to Greece. Now you only got one aircraft carrier there, the USS Abraham Lincoln. They say that Gerald Ford will be in repairs for at least a week, then it's going to come back. You got thousands of Marines headed there. You got additional thousands of ground forces being deployed. The war is costing $1.9 billion per day. They're preparing a $200 billion funding request. Clearly, they are preparing some kind of ground operation. It's just like the initial bombing campaign. First, they're talking about it, discussing it, planting stories in the media. They're considering options. Then it becomes operations. Then it becomes the news. So it's clear that Trump is not able to win with energy war. Not going to happen. He's not able to open the strait by bombing the leadership. He actually wants to pry the strait open with some kind of invasion. He's going to send, it looks like, a U.S. force to the strait or the island to try to take Iranian territory, establish a beachhead, and then at the minimum, even if they're not able to force the Iranian regime to completely capitulate, they can alleviate the economic pressure and collapse the regime as they're able to move the oil through the strait. That seems to be the strategy. And that's crazy. This is a country, as we've talked about, that has 90 million people. It's huge. It's all mountains. And they're all soldiers. They have a million soldiers. They have 200,000 IRGC. They got another 400,000 regular ground forces. They got hundreds of thousands of militiamen. And we're going to invade this country? We don't even have a military big enough. If we had every member of the U.S. military invade Iran, it probably wouldn't be enough. And we're going to go in there with a tiny ground force. There are some reports that say we will go in with the Gulf countries, with the Kurds, Israeli intelligence, U.S. air power, and there's going to be some kind of tactical invasion. This is totally insane. How is this going to work? And then what? They're going to get on the shoreline and then they're going to get hit with drones and missiles there. Or they're going to get ambushed, IEDs. How long are they going to be there? Days, weeks, months, years? And what happens when we sustain heavy casualties? Let's say we try to invade on the shoreline. We're going to retreat after a ton of Americans die. Now they say that the Gulf countries, they want us to collapse the Iranian regime before we leave. They say now that Iran is bombing all of their cities and their energy and their airports, now the Gulf countries view Iran as an existential threat. And they want us to finish the job and collapse the regime before we leave. This is how you get drawn in. When we say we're going to war with Iran, nobody said Trump might make the judicious decision to launch a limited strike on Iran consistent with our interests, but not outside of them, you know, aligned with Israel, but not totally identical. No. People said we would get drawn into a war, dragged into a war. What does that mean? What's the denotative meaning of those words? When we say dragged, when we say drawn, we mean that it is a gradual process where you have mission creep, where the goals keep changing, where one thing leads to another, and over time, there is a pressure, there is a narrowing of options and possibilities that ultimately leads to a full-fledged war. That's what we're talking about. Nobody said the risk is that Trump might do, like I said, a limited tactical operation to achieve U.S. objectives, only U.S. objectives, not, no, no. We said we would be dragged gradually into a war, and we would wake up one day and find ourselves inside of a conflict that nobody wanted. We would find ourselves in a conflict far wider and far deeper and going on for far longer than anybody ever conceived of, that anybody ever wanted, that nobody voted for, which is what happened in Iraq and Syria and Libya and Yemen and everywhere. That was always the risk. Now, why do I say this? Because last year, people saw the bombing of Midnight Hammer and they said, see, we didn't go to war. We did one airstrike and then we left. Mission accomplished. Yeah, but see, Midnight Hammer made epic fury inevitable. And people said the same thing about killing Soleimani. They said, killing Soleimani, that's a good thing. We're not anti-war. We're not isolationists. That's not a war. We just killed one guy. I think I may have said that in 2020 when it happened because I didn't understand the bigger picture back then. I think I was more agnostic about it back then, but now I see how one thing has led to another. This has been going on for decades. We have gradually, step by step, been drawn in. And the Israelis always tell us, well, it's just this. Now it's just this other thing. Now it's just this next thing. And with every strike, diplomacy becomes less likely to succeed. There is less trust between Tehran and Washington. There is less of a possibility for diplomacy to prevail. And then war becomes inevitable. And as time goes on, the goals of the war, the bounds of the war, these are always expanding. And that's precisely what happened here. Maybe we went in to degrade their missiles, but then they closed the Strait of Hormuz. So now we got to open it back up. But guess what? Israel killed Iran's supreme leader. How are they going to make peace now? Israel went out of their way to kill all the leadership, which makes them hate us. It radicalizes them more. It rallies the people around the government. But what's more, they've gone out of their way to kill the members of the leadership that are more likely to make peace. So maybe we went in thinking we're going to neutralize an imminent threat. We're going to destroy some missiles and go home. Israel made it impossible for us to make peace because they killed the supreme leader. They killed the leadership and specifically killed the leadership that was more moderate. And so now we're stuck. Now the Strait of Hormuz is closed. We killed their leader. They don't want to make a deal. They, in a way, can't make a deal. And we have to fight to the finish because we can't leave now. We got to prevent them from controlling the world's energy supply, which is what would happen if we left. We would cede that to them. And now that Iran is bombing the Gulf countries, this is an existential threat to them. If the Emirates is trying to build an economy on tourism, banking, technology, entertainment, how can they do that when they have drones bombing their malls and hotels and airports? They can't. So now they're all in on Iranian regime change, and they're going to lobby us to be all in. And this is how it goes. Israel bombs Iran's energy. Iran bombs the Gulf's energy. Now the Gulf wants Iran to die. This is how you get sucked in. Then we're going to go in. If no other country will help us, if we are not able to withdraw, if Israel wants the fighting to go outside the U.S. commitment, well, then we need to open up the strait. How are we going to do it? Ground forces. What's going to happen? Many of them are going to die. What happens in a war where you have hundreds of dead Americans? Is that going to de-escalate things or escalate things? Does that increase our commitment or lessen it? And as time goes on, we're only approaching the day when an Iranian sleeper cell goes off and kills a bunch of civilians. Just a matter of time. Just a matter of time. That's what it feels like before we are fully fledged in a ground war with Iran. That's how all this is shaping up. That's what it looks like to me. I don't see a way out of it. And in the meantime, there might be a temporary ceasefire or truce. I doubt it, but it's possible. And what all the reports say is that they're going to watch and wait for Iran's society to collapse. You have a truce, have a ceasefire, and that is just going to be a deferring of the fighting. And in the meantime, Mossad and CIA are going to prepare the ground force. The Kurds, anti-government civilians, some kind of U.S. ground force. So even if we don't invade Iran tomorrow, the day is going to come when Iran has regime change and U.S. ground forces are going to be a part of it. And it will be a gradual process, how we get sucked in to yet another war. It's what it is. So that's the current state of the conflict. We're going to be monitoring the situation. Pay close attention. Don't believe anything the president says. It's just unbelievable. He has no idea what he's doing. He's totally out to lunch. He's 100 years old. Every day he contradicts himself. A Tomahawk missile kills the schoolgirls at that school in Tehran. He says, well, that was an Iranian projectile. Oh, actually, it might have been ours. This is a regime change war. Actually, we mostly won. The war's coming to an end quickly. Actually, we're in it for the long haul. We have a coalition open the strait. Never mind. We don't need them anyway. I approved Israel's strike. Actually, I had no idea. There's no plan here. There's no plan. He's making it up as he goes along. He's going off of his gut. He's not going off the intelligence. He's not listening to anybody. This is totally ad hoc, totally flying by the seat of his pants. And, you know, maybe that wouldn't be a problem, except that Israel has a plan. Okay, Israel has a strategy. They have a plan. This is their Super Bowl. They've been waiting a long, long time for this. So Trump stumbled into this conflict. No idea what would happen. No plan, no contingency. And Netanyahu, the master, the maestro, who's orchestrating the whole thing, he knows exactly how this has to go. The tempo, whether we're going fast or slow. He knows what he wants from this. He knows what he wants out of Trump. And Trump is just being fed propaganda through Fox News every day, which Israel controls. That's where we are. I told you so. I told you this is how it would be. People said, I can't believe it. I just can't see it, Nick. I saw it. I was playing Dark and Darker with some BAP guy, some meathead bodybuilder sunning his balls. Oh, I like BAP book. BAP book been out how long? Faggot. I liked the guy. He was nice enough or whatever. But I was playing Dark and Darker with this BAP chud, sunning his balls, all that nonsense. And I said, listen, motherfucker. I said, Trump is bringing us to war with Iran. Do you support that? He goes, I don't know, dude. I just don't see that happening. I don't know. I just don't see that happening. Because you're not paying attention. You don't see it because you're not looking. Because your eyes aren't open. Because you are asleep. So how would you see it? People are soundly asleep, eyes closed, snoring and kicking and carrying on, dreaming about a golden age, dreaming about Pam Bondi and Mark Rubio dancing to Staying Alive, and they go, I don't know, I just can't see it. I can't see Trump going to war with Iran. That's because you're asleep. You're in the Matrix. Your eyes are closed. My eyes are wide open and have been, and I'm awake. I'm an awakened goy. It was obvious it was going here. I told you it would be like this. But you didn't listen to me. If you actually cared, you'd be here. Remember when? But it's true. And now we pay the price. I told, of all the words of tongue and pen, the saddest are these. Nick Fuentes was right again. You called me a Democrat. Fuck you. People said, you know what people said? They said that I didn't get charged in January 6th because the Biden DOJ forced me to take a deal. And they said the contents of the deal were that I would have to support Democrats in politics to stay out of jail. So my handler from the Biden government is checking in on me. Did you support the Democrats today? Yes, sir. Please don't arrest me. Because I was saying that Trump would bring us to war in Iran. Yeah, well, I guess you were wrong. And I was right. You were wrong. I was right. You voted for this. F you. You fell for it again. I'm right about everything. Serves you right. You trusted a Jew. Trump is a Jew. And you trusted him. Serves you right. MAGA. LOL. MAGA. M-A-G-A. How about LOL? There won't be a lot of LOL or LMAO when you're MAGAing because it's all MIGA. It's all make Israel great again. So people are going to be saying OMG when we're dropping bombs on Iran. Crazy, crazy. Anyway. We got to move on. We got to get into the super chats, but it's true. But I'm so mad. I am so mad right now. It's crazy. It's crazy that I told you exactly how it would go, and you just didn't believe me. Do you hate me? Do you hate me? Why do you hate me? I'm right about everything. I am a genius, and you didn't listen to me. Why? Why didn't you? You thought you were smarter than me? You're not. Well, you think you're better than me? You're not. Why didn't you listen? I was correct. My arguments were sound. It's because you like Trump more than me. Well, you learned your lesson. I hope this is a lesson. Never doubt Nick Fuentes. That's the that's your lesson for the day. Anyway, I'm having a little fun with it, but I am being totally serious. I am being absolutely serious. We're joking around a little bit. It's funny though, isn't it? Not really, but in a way. It's like, I wake up every day and I'm like, wow, we're really doing this. We're really in a war with Iran and Trump brought us here. If only someone told us this 2 years ago, we could have prevented it. But people said, Nick, it's the lesser of two evils. We'll tweet about it after the election. Oh, okay. And what do you think? Susie Wiles is going to kick down the door of the Oval Office? Mr. President, you have to see this. Captive Dreamer just tweeted. Did you really think that's how it works? We would have been better off with Kamala. What, did you just fall out of a coconut tree? You exist within the context of all in which you live and what came before you. Never forget that. Never forget that. Kamala tried to warn us. She said, we're not going back to slavery under the Jews. And I was like, dude, so true. But you thought we were going to be pumping our fists, saying YMCA. Everybody that did the dance must die now. You do realize that, right? Everyone that did the MAGA dance, you realize you must die now, right? No, I'm kidding. No violence, but imagine, I hope you feel dumb. I hope you feel like an idiot. Every person that did the dance, I hope you feel like the biggest dumbass clown, brown clown ever. Imagine you are like going a time machine back to 2024. Okay, whatever you were doing in 2024, go back in a time machine. You're doing your little dance saying, this is me on my way to vote for a golden age. This is me on my way to vote for mass deportations. Listen up, you got 100 days until Stephen Miller deports you. Now look at us. How does that make you feel? You were dancing as you voted for this. You were dancing. You were doing that stupid dance to that stupid faggoty song while you voted to die for Israel and Iran. That is the wages of voting Republican. Never forget that. Now, this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then we're going to move on. Listen and listen well. Don't blame it on Israeli intelligence. Don't blame it on the bad advisors. This is Trump's fault. Trump did this. Trump is the president of the United States. If the Israelis were threatening to kill him, that is actually, you have to be a martyr then. If the implication is Trump couldn't keep us out of the war because then they would kill him, well, that's actually what's involved when you run the country, when you're the president of the United States. Time to nut up. Okay, that's your obligation. You're not okay with that? Don't run for president. Trump did this. Trump did this. He's not a woman, okay? You cannot absolve him of responsibility. Well, his bad advisors made him do it. Well, his bad advisors aren't the president of the United States. The bad advisors weren't on the ballot in November. Trump was. Don't tell me it was bad intelligence. Tulsi Gabbard is the DNI. Joe Kent was the director of national intelligence or counterterrorism. They weren't on the ballot either, and they didn't authorize the strikes. Trump did. Voting for Trump got you this. You voted for this. Don't tell me I didn't vote for this. Yes, you did. Trump said Iran can't have a nuclear weapon. Netanyahu gave a speech to a joint session of Congress. He hugged Trump in Mar-a-Lago. Yes, you did vote for this. You voted for this, and Trump is giving you this. Tucker told you to vote for this at the RNC. Candace Owens told you to vote for this on her show. They all did. Ian Carroll told you to vote for this because of RFK Jr. and his best friend, Rabbi Shmuley. They all told you to vote for this. They were wrong. You were wrong. The Republicans did this. Listen and listen well. Don't let them trick you and make the same mistake again. In 2026, vote Republican. It will be different. Why would it be any different? Why would it be different? Vote in 28. We got to salvage Vance. Why? Vance is the vice president right now. He encouraged Trump to bomb Iran. He said to bomb Iran at the RNC in 2024. Why would it be any different? That's the part they won't tell you. That's the limited hangout. Now, this is not me saying, hey, the Democrats are not controlled by Israel. They are too. But here's the plan. In 2026, we need to shut this administration down. Who's going to do it? Democrats. It's a midterm. Do you know what that means? Trump is not on the ballot. The House is, and a third of the Senate. If the Democrats gain control of the House, they will get oversight powers. What is oversight powers? Subpoena, deposition, compelling the release of documents. They can form subcommittees. And what they will do is they will investigate the Trump government. They will slow it down because they have a political incentive to do so. Republicans won't hold other Republicans accountable. It's a structural thing. They need money from the Republican committee. They need the Republican leadership to give them committee assignments and other forms of patronage. So the Democrats, because of political necessity, they will use oversight powers as a blunt weapon against the Trump administration. No, they're not based. No, they're not anti-Israel. No, they're not any of those things. But because they're set against, structurally aligned against the GOP, they will slow the administration down. If this administration's controlled by Jews in Israel doing all this harm, that's a good thing. That's why I'm telling people to vote Democrat this year. It's not because I'm under any illusions. I'm voting Democrat to be an obstruction, an impediment to this administration from the executive branch of the government, because the House will use its oversight. There's checks and balances to check the power of the executive branch, and they will slow down this Israel-occupied, out-of-control administration. Step two, in 2028, we need someone to run in the Democrat or Republican primary who is actually America first. I don't care which one. I'm not going to vote for Gavin Newsom. I'm not going to vote for J.D. Vance. I'm not going to vote for Josh Shapiro. I'm not going to vote for Marco Rubio. 2028, we need to be prepared to say we will vote for anybody in a Democrat primary, in a Republican primary, who will put America first. But nobody from this administration who has brought us to war in Iran, nobody who has taken AIPAC money or Adelson money, nobody who's taken J Street money, nobody who's taken Jewish money can even be in consideration. And that's what we're playing for. Do not be tricked and deceived into getting right back on the hamster wheel and being part of the machine. We got to get out there and hold the line, whatever. That's the part they won't tell you. Because Tucker has a candidate. It'll be J.D. Vance. Tucker might even run. And you know what he's going to do? If Tucker runs for office, he is going to be a spoiler. You're going to be excited about it. You're going to love it. And you know what Tucker's going to do? Ted Cruz will run also. Tucker is going to grill Ted Cruz on Israel. He's going to grill Marco Rubio on Israel. And he will take all the blows, all the damage. He will be called an anti-Semite. He will be the Israel critical candidate. But he'll never win. He'll drop out and he'll endorse J.D. Vance. And that way, J.D. Vance doesn't have to get in the mud. He won't have to get his hands dirty. He won't have to take a position on Israel. He won't have to get into the scrum with the others. He won't have to get dirty and get ugly. Tucker will do that and bow out. At least this is my vision in 28. I don't think Tucker seriously thinks he's going to be president. I don't think he even wants to be president. That's why they groomed J.D. That's why they groomed J.D. to be the guy. J.D. is still their guy. So when Tucker says, well, I might run, either that's just sensationalism to get clicks, that's just a load of fucking garbage, or if he is considering running, it's some convoluted operation like that. Mark my words. We weren't born yesterday. So, and they're going to try to prevent the emergence of a real America First candidate. Suck all the oxygen out of the room for a Groiper. Take all the blows from the Jewish lobby and then bow out and throw all that support to Vance. I think that's the op here. If there is one. So we have to be very shrewd. It all has to do with the elections. Yes, the elections do matter. If they didn't matter, they wouldn't put so much effort and money into media. People say, does voting even matter? Yeah, but it's how you use it. If voting didn't matter, why would they care about the media? They deeply care about the media. That's why Andrew Tate is in jail. Why is Andrew Tate in jail? Why does the UK want him dead? Because he was too influential. Why was that a problem? Because if you're too influential, you can get people to do things, vote, demonstrate, whatever. Same goes for Alex Jones. Why did they target Alex Jones? Massive audience. Massive audience. Why would they care about the opinion of the masses if the masses could do nothing? So, and anyway, it doesn't all come down to voting. In the meantime, you should still be leveling up and doing your part. But if we're going to engage in the political system, let's be wise about it. Let's be smart. Let's not be dumb and just vote Republican, which is what Tucker told us to do. I've yet to see a reckoning with that. Tucker told us to vote for Trump. He still doesn't critique Trump. Well, he wants to lobby Trump in the future. Oh, okay, yeah, because that's super effective, right?